we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today, we will be discussing the source of cat and dog food sold in most pet stores and the rendering facilities that make use of waste from slaughterhouses. And then we will discuss healthier dietary options for our animals who we care for. I'm joined in studio today with my friends and animal rights heroes, Daniela.
Hi.
And Laura Simonson.
Hi.
Later on in the show, we will be talking to them about their research into the pet food industry, the rendering facilities where common pet food is made, and whole food, plant-based alternative options for our animal companions. Today is Friday, July 29th, 2016, and this is our annual Pride Show. In honor of Pride, we will be featuring an interview with one of my personal heroes, Nathan Runkle, the co-founder and president of one of my favorite organizations, Mercy for Animals. Nathan identifies as gay and has been a strong voice for LGBTQ rights and, of course, through his organization, Mercy for Animals, a powerful advocate for farm animal rights. Mercy for Animals is an organization that strives for a humane society by working to reduce the greatest amount of suffering for the largest number of animals. Their efforts focus on protecting farmed animals, the most abused and exploited animals on the planet, and utilize a broad range of strategic approaches that expose cruelty, prosecute abusers, and inspire consumers to make compassionate food choices. Listeners may have heard of the Chilliwack Dairy undercover investigation performed by Mercy for Animals in 2014, which led to SPCA cruelty charges. Our co-producer this week, Daniela, had a conversation with Nathan about his views on the parallels between the oppression faced by those within the LGBTQ community and animal rights issues, and the discrimination that each group can suffer from. Let's listen now.
Hi, Nathan. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Since it's Pride Week here in Vancouver this weekend, we would love to take this opportunity to talk about how LGBTQ and animal rights are connected. But first off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a vegan animal rights activist and how you started Mercy for Animals?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised on a small crop farm in rural Ohio, and always had a natural connection and affinity to animals. I could always put myself in their place and see the world through their eyes and really sympathize with their pain and distress. And ever since I was young, I considered our dogs and cats to be members of our family who I would do anything to protect. But my uncles were hunters and trappers and fishermen, so I witnessed deer and rabbits and fish being skinned alive and really being treated in just horrible ways since I was a child. And that never felt right to me. I always felt that all animals deserved our consideration. When I learned about factory farming as an 11-year-old, I decided to become a vegetarian and decided I didn't want to pay someone else to abuse or oppress animals on my behalf. When I was 15, there was an animal abuse case at our local high school, which ultimately led me to found Mercy for Animals. And the story goes something like this. There was an agricultural class at the local high school. It was the Future Farmers of America class. And the teacher of that program was also a pig farmer. Now, it came to the point in the curriculum where they were to do a dissection project. So the teacher decided that he would kill baby piglets on his pig farm and bring them to the school for the dissection. When he arrived to the school on this morning with the bucket of piglets, one of them was still alive. She was standing on top of the other piglets, and a student in the class who did part-time work on the teacher's pig farm took this piglet by her hind legs and slammed her head first into the ground in an attempt to kill this piglet. She was absolutely determined to survive. She had such a spark for life, a will to live, that this horrible assault still didn't kill her. A few of the students grabbed this dying piglet, left the classroom, went to another teacher in the school who was known as being the vegetarian who cared about animals. She left the school with this piglet, went to a local veterinarian and had this baby piglet euthanized. Animal cruelty charges ended up being filed against the agriculture teacher, and it became a big deal in this local community. It was in the newspaper, it was on television, and it went to court. And the very first day of that trial, the animal cruelty charges were dismissed because in Ohio, like most states in the U.S., if something is considered standard agricultural practice, it's exempt from cruelty prosecution. And unfortunately, slamming baby piglets headfirst into the ground is considered standard agricultural practice. It takes place on pig farms all over the U.S. and Canada, so it was deemed legal. So I decided back in 1999 after this incident to start Mercy for Animals to give a voice to farmed animals across the U.S. and now across the world.
Wow. Thank you so much, because this is really important. A lot of people always think that these are one-off incidents, but they're actually common business practices, and a lot of people are unaware of this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. As I said, this incident, while it happened in a public school in front of students and evoked so much shock and outrage, is a standard agricultural practice, and that's why it was deemed legal. And you know, Mercy for Animals were largely known now internationally for our undercover investigations, which expose these types of practices. And a lot of times when people see these undercover videos or see photographs of inside of factory farms, they want to believe that this is an isolated incident, that this is a bad apple or an employee going rogue. But in fact, that's just not the case. These abuses go hand in hand with animal agriculture, with factory farm systems. They're built into the business models. And, it's the entire system that really needs to be changed.
That's exactly it. It's institutionalized, and we don't even recognize that this is happening on a daily basis.
And that's absolutely right. And I think a large part of why this is allowed to continue is because it is so out of sight and out of mind for most people.
Right.
Most people simply don't understand that this abuse is taking place on the scale that it is. And that's largely by design. The meat, dairy, and egg industries go to extreme lengths to keep people in the dark.
Exactly. So my next question is, the more we understand the mechanisms of oppression, we clearly see that the same power structures are responsible for all oppressions. Can you give us any example from your experiences where you have observed same underlying problems in both forms of oppression for the LGBTQ community and non-human animals?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can start by talking about my personal experience. So, you know, growing up gay in a small farm community, needless to say, was a very difficult experience for me personally. I was bullied. I was, physically attacked and assaulted. Growing up, I was called names. And much of this was because I was viewed as other by those around me. And I think it is that view of others and those who are different from us and who we can view as weaker or more vulnerable that leads to so much exploitation and oppression. Whether it is animals that are viewed as others, in this case, farm animals who are literally persecuted and abused and exploited and killed simply because of who they are, because they are unfortunate enough to be born as a farmed animal. And that is oftentimes the case with the LGBTQ community as well. We are bullied. We are a subject of discrimination simply because of who we are. And the powers that be, whether it be in our political system or just in terms of population, being heterosexual can oftentimes inflict, so much oppression upon communities of minorities and those who may be viewed as weaker or more vulnerable, especially in our political system.
Right. So anything that deviates from the norm, that we perceive from the norm, we grew up learning that they're different and therefore we have the right to treat them differently. But that is simply wrong and needs to be exposed and educated on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So as a member of the LGBTQ community, how do you see the acceptance within the animal rights movement of LGBTQ members, and vice versa, how do you see the comprehension and understanding of animal rights within the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, this is a great question. And, you know, Mercy for Animals, we have been participating in gay pride events across the United States and now in Canada for over a decade. We were really the first animal organization to participate in these events. We march in pride events. We exhibit at pride events. We have banners that say no one is free when others are oppressed. We pass that information talking about the intersectionality of these issues. And I will say, in large part, I do believe that in both the animal community and the LGBT community, that there is compassion for each other. And I think that in the LGBT community, there is this understanding of what it feels like to be bullied, to be victimized, to be on the receiving end of oppression. And I think that living those experiences of life, of being other, has sensitized many in the LGBT community to the plight of animals. And if you look at the small amount of data that has been done on the number of self-identified vegetarians or vegans within the LGBTQ community, it is higher than that of the heterosexual community. And I think that there's some reflection of that in the number of vegetarians and vegans in the LGBT community. That being said, there is a long way to go with the LGBT community, I think, fully embracing animal rights as a social justice issue, as an issue that needs to really be addressed. And, you know, I can say that many of the conversations I've had with my community have been positive, but some of them have been incredibly dismissive, and, you know, a complete lack of compassion and awareness for animals. So I think that there is a lot of work that still needs to be done. And the same is true with the animal community. I would say, you know, overall, I have felt very welcomed and accepted within the animal community as being a gay man. But I have experienced and seen overt homophobia within our movement as well. And I have seen people who seem to be really not fully aware that the political choices that they make or the words that they use or even how they interact with others can be supporting homophobia. And I think that it is something that our community also needs to be very vigilant about, because compassion is compassion. And that has been our message, is that if we are kind to one another, we should be kind to animals and vice versa. And I think that message is taking root, but I think that both communities have a long way to go to fully embrace that.
Exactly. No, that's great. Same for feminism as well, where we just have to take this time and platform to educate amongst ourselves and also invite others and respect them equally, no matter what. And what is the major problem within society when it comes to understanding equality of LGBTQ communities? What is the best approach, do you think, to eliminate these problems and issues?
You know, I think that this goes back to, it comes back to this notion of otherness. And I think it also comes back to sharing our stories. I think just like it's so vital to share the stories of abused animals within animal agriculture with the public, and to show that these are unique, sensitive, thoughtful individuals who care about their lives and have needs and interests that should be protected. The same is true with the LGBT community. I mean, all of the data shows that people who have friends or family members or coworkers who are LGBT and who are out and talk about who they are and live authentic lives are far more likely to be supportive of full equality. So I think that a lot of this comes down to, you know, living an authentic life, being out, being proud, and sharing your story, sharing, you know, the struggles that you faced from oppression and from homophobia, how it's affected you. And I think that that can really start to shift. You know, when I grew up, my grandmother said overtly homophobic things when I was a child. My others in my family said the same. And that's because they had been conditioned through so many things. To view the LGBT community as these, you know, horrible people. But when they found out that there were members of their own family who were LGBT and that we all were seeking the same thing, which is love and companionship and kindness and freedom, the same thing that animals are seeking, when we see that we are all similar in the ways that are important, I think that some of these walls of oppression can really start to fall away.
Right. That's really powerful, because I think the more we're exposed from an early age and that we consider everybody equally, and that's why I think it's also important that these issues are discussed in schools, like just standard, because when I think of growing up in Switzerland, I don't think we had any minority in my class, nothing whatsoever. So everything after comes in life that you have to experience and get to know and understand. So if they can put this into school systems where we're taught that on every subject matter, every oppression, then kids grow up knowing that there is no difference, and they don't start to create divide. Even at home, when it's discussed, they know from daily exposure that this is not acceptable.
Yeah, I think no child is born homophobic or racist or sexist. These are oppressive societal views that children are taught. And you know, in my view, there are two victims with every homophobic belief, and the same with every speciesist belief. It's not only the animal who's a victim of it, or the member of the LGBT community, but it's those that are holding on to these feelings of hate and fear and judgment. I mean, to me, there's such a lack of freedom and love and compassion in those views that are held. And I think it's not the children who are LGBT or from any minority group, they don't only benefit from these types of discussions, but the other children who may be victims of being taught homophobic views also benefit from being taught, you know, acceptance and love and kindness and compassion. And I think that is something that our society should really be elevating ourselves towards.
Can you suggest any resources for people, how to educate themselves, any recommended books, blogs, people to follow and to learn about LGBTQ?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there are so many wonderful organizations that are working on behalf of LGBTQ issues. In the U.S., there's the Human Rights Campaign, which does the international work. There's GLAAD, which works in how the LGBT community is portrayed in the media. Here in Los Angeles, we have the LA LGBT Center that provides direct care to people that are in the LGBT community, everyone from senior citizens, which oftentimes are victims of going back in the closet because of when they go into nursing homes, sort of the oppressive views that are held there, to youth, which LGBT youth are at higher rates of homelessness after being kicked out from their unaccepting families. So there really are so many organizations that are working on these issues that I encourage people to look at the national organizations that are affecting the legislative systems, to the media, but also look at organizations in your own community that are providing, you know, direct services in your own backyard. They all need your support. And there are just so many different blogs and books. One of my favorite books is called The Velvet Rage, which I think really gives people, both in the LGBT community, but also allies and those who are seeking to understand sort of the challenges and the oppression that LGBT citizens face. So I highly recommend The Velvet Rage for people as well.
Awesome. We're going to make sure that we're putting that on our Facebook and website for people to get the resources and educate themselves and others. And thank you so much for being on the show.
I just want to thank you so much for having me. I think this is such an important discussion for our community, the animal community, to be having. And, those who don't self-identify as LGBTQ, their allies are exactly what is needed to make so much important progress to the LGBT community, just like we are allies to animals and helping them overcome the cruelty that we inflict upon them.
Creating allies and in numbers, we can make change happen. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Nathan. Have a great day.
Well, that was a fantastic interview, Daniela. Thank you so much for doing that. And thanks to Nathan as well for making time for us.
You're welcome.
And if anyone is interested in leafleting on behalf of Mercy for Animals during Vancouver's Pride festivities this weekend, please contact me, Jen Dobell, via the Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page to pick up some brochures on compassionate living that you can hand out to the public. Now I'd like to tell you a little bit more about one of our in-studio guests today, Laura Simonson. Laura is a 25-year entrepreneur, speaker, marketing professional, and passionate plant-powered living advocate. Laura has created, marketed, consulted to, and championed dozens of businesses whose social impact is as important as their bottom line. Laura was also the founder of the Live It Lifestyle Studio, a successful business promoting plant-based diets and fitness, where she developed programs, seminars, and keynote speaking events. Keynote speaking events for thousands of people internationally and online for over 17 years. Laura's new business venture is called the Dog Canine Nutrition Company, pronounced D-O-G-G, which is the new generation of dog, and it's a Vancouver-based business, which is an exciting, innovative brand serving the fastest-growing market and veterinary professionals seeking diet solutions that are whole food, plant-based, and supported by scientific evidence. Laura, many people are unaware that dogs can live happy, healthy lives on a vegan diet, but you have a number of veterinarians who support your company, as seen from the testimonials on your website. Have you found that it's been challenging to convince people to switch their dogs to a vegan diet?
It was when I started in 1989. actually, today it is a lot. It's very, very different from the first time that I had a looked at a book that said vegetarian dogs can be vegetarian as well. And it was at that moment that this idea was born. And throughout the years, I knew that the only way that we could make a difference within helping people to see that dogs can thrive on a plant-based diet was, number one, to live it myself and experience it, which I did. Number two was to gather as much evidence as possible and find the veterinarians and the community that would want to support finding and creating the evidence so that we could make this happen. So to say that it was hard, yeah, it's been, about, since 1989, and I made a choice then that this would be a life journey. And today I can say that the veterinarians that we've approached throughout the last 5-6 years as we've been building this business development plan, it's been extraordinary. Their responses have been incredible. And all of them are agreeing that we definitely have the right idea here and we're going in the right direction. So yeah, it would have been difficult, but it's getting easier. And I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of that evidence.
Well, I'm really grateful for your dedication because I know doing these kinds of projects is extremely time consuming, isn't it?
Yes.
Could you tell us briefly about your vegan dog food? What is it made of? Is it kibble or wet food?
We've made the choice to go with a moist, fresh food. And this is the first time that a diet like this has been created. And we also made the choice to make it a whole food diet. Literally, there aren't even any oils in our product. So this is our first formulation. This is not something that's been around for a long, long while. So it's our first formulation. This formulation is made of all whole foods. So it's red lentils, chickpeas, sweet potato, hemp, kale, and algae flakes, which is a whole fat. It's also, of course, has a customized supplement because we need to ensure for all dogs that the foods are complete and balanced. And it has been created with a board-certified veterinary nutritionist, which again is an uncommon occurrence with regards to fresh foods on the market.
Have you tried it yourself? It sounds like people feel.
Yeah, yes, yes, they are. It is actually very good. And yes, you can eat it.
I know personally, I would just put some salt on it, which would make it not okay for dogs. But I'm a salt fiend.
There you go.
Do you have any success stories from dogs whose health have been improved by switching to your brand?
Well, coincidentally, you know, you're having me on the show here today, and we literally just released our first preliminary statement from a 12-week trial that we did with 20 dogs here in Vancouver at the Yaletown Pet Hospital. So anecdotally, I have dozens of stories over the last several years. Obviously, with regards to people that did take some of the information I shared with them at a level to try it with their own dogs. But we knew we needed to take it to another level, which was to actually have a trial, a feeding trial, which is a very costly and time-consuming adventure. But we made a choice to do that, to launch our company. And so far, we've got several dogs in this trial had great results. And what's exciting is that the good news about this is that there's a problem within canine foods, which is a food sensitivity issue. Vegan foods, plant-based foods actually can solve many of the food sensitivity issues. So this is where we're starting with our foods, so we can create a choice in that part of the veterinary industry. But yes, we do have many good results and testimonials.
That's awesome. I'd love to read some of those. Mm-hmm. So in your discussions with veterinarians, do you think that any and every dog can thrive on a plant-based nutrition, or do you suggest that pet owners monitor their dog's condition carefully with a vet, as is highly crucial with cats on vegan diets, for example?
You basically answered the question within that. Yes and no. We don't know if all animals and all dogs can thrive on a plant-based diet. We want to set out to prove that this is possible by providing complete and balanced plant-based protein foods for dogs. And so we can't say at this point that it is the perfect solution, but there isn't a perfect solution yet. And that's what we're setting out to do.
Okay. And where can our listeners find out about where they'll be able to get your dog food?
They can certainly go to our website, which is dogfood.ca, dogfood.ca. You can certainly find us on Facebook under Dog Canine Nutrition, and info@dogfood.ca. We'll definitely get back and share all of the information with you. Our studies and our evidence and the feeding trials will be published publicly, including the ingredients, everything that was used, so that anybody can use this information anywhere in the world.
That's great. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, and I love what you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad from 7 to 8 p.m.
Tune in to Fruit Salad.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad.
Check out Fruit Salad Thursday nights from 7 to 8 p.m., highlighting queer, trans, lesbian, gay organizations, writers, performers, musicians, families, pink world news, and much, much more. Fresh fruit every show.
Tune in and queer out.
And now for news and events. On Saturday, July 30th, tomorrow, the group Liberate Greater Vancouver Zoo Animals is holding an educational event for the public at Aldergrove's Greater Vancouver Zoo. The event takes place from 10 to 4 o'clock. The zoo itself is holding a Lego building event, and we wish to counter that with a fun and educational event for the attendees of the zoo. Ideas include face painting, chalk art, bubble wands, etc. Please come and bring anything that you feel will create a fun and attractive event. As usual, the always generous David Isbister will provide delicious vegan food. Thank you, David. We love you. You can find more information and ride sharing on the Facebook page Liberate GV Zoo Animals. Tomorrow in Victoria, BC, the group Victoria Horse Alliance, which is dedicated to banning horse carriage rides, is holding an event outside the Tourism Victoria office from 12 to 2 o'clock. The location is downtown at 812 Wharf Street. More info can be found on the Facebook group Victoria Horse Alliance. In animal rights news, recently an RCMP officer from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, left his police dog in his vehicle overnight and was noticed by a bystander at 7 a.m. when the outside temperature was already 22 degrees. She kept an eye on the dog for 4 hours, called the SPCA and the RCMP. And the SPCA told her that police dogs are built for this, which makes no sense that a dog can be trained to withstand heat. All dogs suffer in heat. The RCMP defended this action, but veterinarians disagree that this is acceptable when interviewed on the topic. The officer was not charged. Police dogs are often kept in vehicles overnight, and RCMP say that they are a good second home for the animals. This reminds me of a time last winter when I called the RCMP and the SPCA about a dog that had been left outside in sub-zero temperatures for weeks on end with no shelter from the cold. I was laughed at by the officers who said they kept their own dogs in the cold on these nights and they refused to go to the scene to investigate. Police dogs are often put into dangerous and life-threatening situations on behalf of humans, and I wish that they would be given the respect they deserve from their handlers.
Yeah, there was once an incident, I believe in Alberta, where two dogs were left in the car while the cops went into to grab coffee or lunch, and they left the air conditioning on. And when they came back, the two dogs were dead because the air conditioning failed, which turned up the heat, and there was hot air coming out. And that's how quick it can happen. So even leaving air conditionings on, you know, it just takes a few minutes of hot air circulating.
Mm-hmm. What are the chances that would happen when there's dogs in the car? What a shame.
Right.
So today we're discussing the source of cat and dog food sold in most pet stores, rendering facilities that make use of waste from slaughterhouses, and better dietary options for our animals who we care for. We just had an interview with Laura Simonson of DOGG, D-O-G-G, plant-based dog food, and now we're speaking with Daniela about her research into the current state of pet food industry and what goes on at the rendering facilities where most pet food is made. Thanks for being here, Daniela. Can you tell us what you've learned?
Yes, and thanks for having me on. I'm not a veterinarian or a professional, but I would like to give you some insight and food for thought. So let's start with the biology and behavior of cats. Cats are opportunistic feeders. They will eat whatever food is easiest to find that will also satisfy their nutritional needs. Today, feral cats' main source of food is almost always people's garbage. Just as cats 10,000 years ago were attracted to the easy, consistent food source that the first human settlements provided, feral cats today scavenge on the scraps that all human habitats inevitably produce. A study of a feral cat colony in Brooklyn found that the cats depended more on local garbage for food than on either prey or feeding by caregivers, and that the neighborhood produced enough garbage to feed three times more cats than actually lived in that area. So cats play a complex role in local ecosystems and cannot simply be removed from any environment without consequences. Evidence suggests that cat predation is often compensatory predation, preying on animals that would likely have died anyway from disease or hunger. Studies show that the animals caught by predators are generally weaker and more diseased than those killed by man-made sources. One study found that birds killed by cats had significantly lower mass fat scores and pectoral muscle mass scores than birds of the same species killed by cars or windows. These studies indicate that cats are catching what some biologists refer to as doomed surplus, animals who would not have lived and so whose death does not affect overall population levels. And cats are called obligate carnivores, which refers to them being able to only get their taurine from prey animals, which is vital to cats. And taurine is extremely heat sensitive, so any commercial pet food in cans or kibble you buy will have synthetic taurine added and wouldn't be from its quote-unquote natural source in the first place. However, our cats do not live in natural settings per se. They're opportunistic and they live often sedentary or comfortable lives, and we feed them anything but their natural diets. No cat would hunt a cow, pig, or kangaroo. But that is not my point. The point is that cats need specific nutrients, and as long as you know the exact requirements for cats, you can adequately feed your feline family members. But this should always be discussed with your veterinarian. So now let's look at the commercial pet foods. First of all, there's no per se regulations. You may have heard of the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, the CVM, Center for Veterinary Medicine, or AAFCO. OFCO, American Feed Control Officials. Someone has to make sure pet food doesn't contain any harmful or misleading ingredients, right? Well, unfortunately, the answer isn't clear-cut. There isn't one single office that provides seamless overall supervision of the industry, and often terms such as human-grade, organic, natural are completely misleading and do not mean what we think. The only thing that is given is the guaranteed analysis called GA. The only things that are required to be in the GA include minimum percentages of crude protein and crude fat, the maximum percentage of crude fiber, and the total percentage of moisture. Therefore, any label saying nutritionally complete or balanced diet can be pure marketing jargon. Only in extreme cases does the FDA or the CVM get involved in an investigation of food maker. And for example, a shocking fact is when Dr. Mark Morris, who also founded Hill's Pet Food, designed a food that met all of the AFCO nutrient profile requirements, even though the food, and now get this, was primarily formulated from old shoe leather, sawdust, motor oil, and with a multivitamin mineral supplement added. Obviously, there would be no guarantee that any animal would eat such a food or be adequate, even though it contained all the requirements by AFCO. The testing requirements of feed is also very low. Pets need to be fed 6 months the same feed, and if their blood tests are normal, the food passes. And the control group only has to be 8 animals, and 6 have to finish the trial. AFCO has no power whatsoever. They only provide a platform for discussion by all interested parties. For example, the lobbying group Pet Food Institute, as well as the grain and feed industries and the rendering industry. The presence of so many vested parties, all of whom would like to influence the feed control officers to benefit their own aspects of the industry, which worries many animal lovers. The rendering industry tries to consistently push terms such as byproducts to be labeled as animal protein, which means they then could put in any kind of animal. And this is where it gets really interesting and shocking. What is sent to rendering plants in the first place? For example, restaurant grease, roadkill, euthanized pets from veterinary clinics and zoos, past due date grocery meat, including packaging, unfit for human consumption, animals or animal body parts from slaughterhouses, ranches, farms, auctions, and actually they can be left outside in the sun for days. And when they're picked up, they are at the rendering plant, they're processed at high heats, and which kill most pathogens and also a lot of nutritional values. It will become either fat or protein, that is for sure, but all other nutrients need to be added back when they make pet food. And yes, I did mention that you may be feeding dogs and cats to your dogs and cats. And how did they figure this out? Well, studies were done to see why pentobarbiturals, the drug that euthanized pets, was found in pet foods and how much. The study showed that the drug was present but couldn't determine the amount. So are we slowly killing our pets with the pet foods we're feeding them? Now, my question is, how crazy does a plant-based whole food cat or dog food sound to you? We have already established that cats are opportunistic scavengers and that if their diet contains the proper nutrients in the adequate amounts, it doesn't matter where it comes from. There are a few cat food brands available that have passed all testings. For example, Ami, Benevo are just two that come to mind. Of course, to change foods, you will have to do gradual and, of course, talk to your veterinarian and do routine blood and urine samples and to make sure. There is so much that could be said about this subject matter, and there is endless information available. In case someone needs more information, I'm glad to put together a list of links and resources. There is also a website called VeggieCat that has all the information. You can buy the proper supplements, and it comes with exact and precise cooking instructions for dry or wet food. This may be a very controversial subject matter, and people are afraid. It's a new concept and needs more education and understanding. Just like most consider humans on a plant-based diet to be careless and inappropriate, our pets live with us and often have similar diseases such as diabetes, obesity, cancer. However, if we consider what we feed them, it's like we're feeding them junk food often. Even if you can reduce to half home-cooked or find a hydrolyzed soy protein diet, mix it in with the protein of the largest mammal possible. Veganism is about the minimum harm principle, and I once calculated how many buffaloes or bisons cows one cat can eat, and it turned out by carcass weight, a cat can eat each day for 30 years and would only eat one animal. So if we go by the minimum principle, it is best to try to minimize the harmful store-bought, mislabeled, and rendered proteins and try to feed higher plant-based proteins mixed with the largest mammal, not fish, rabbit, chicken, kangaroo. There is no perfect solution, and people need to do their own research and consult with their veterinarian. There are people that have successfully fed cats for over 8 years and they are healthy. Then there are others that cannot imagine feeding them plant-based. In the end, it all comes down to knowledge, care, and respect. Each cat is different, but there is always more to learn, and never forget to question everything, even the term obligate carnivore.
Well, thanks. That's a lot of really great information, Daniela. And it's funny because as I was driving into work today, I almost vomited with the smell of this part of town. We're in the Hastings Sunrise area. And of course, we all know there's a rendering plant down here and a chicken slaughterhouse. When you said it's like feeding our cats junk food, I would argue it's much worse.
Right, right. Especially once you start to get to know what's in there and what their requirements are. And for example, I just want to bring up one of my cats has a animal protein allergy, and this has been confirmed by my vet. And so what we try to do is elimination diets. We first stopped feeding fish and then chicken and all that and went to a venison or something. But only when she was once on a fully plant-based whole foods diet, she eliminated all her problems. And so when I talk to my vet about this, and if that works for my cat and my cat's blood results come out healthy, there's nothing that it is against this. It's actually for her benefit and her health and well-being. And that's why people have to understand this is not taken lightly whatsoever if you do your research.
Right. And what is involved in you when you went onto this diet with your animals, the blood work and the urine testing? I think I was talking to you a few days ago and you had a funny story about the spoon when your cats are peeing.
Yeah. And this started way before I was even vegan and way before my cats. One of my cats had urinary stones, like bladder stones, and we had to make sure her pH level was right. And this can be done by anybody. So what you do is you catch your cat in the litter box, you grab a spoon, and you just put it under there and hope that you'll catch some drops. And then you take those pH strips and you make sure that they're not too alkaline or acidic, because in each way they can create different kinds of crystals and stones, which can cost a lot. And I faced thousands of dollars of surgery bill.
My cat almost died from crystals.
Yeah, and it was on a meat diet, no plant-based whatsoever. So just to make sure this happens and needs to be observed.
Yeah, and we are clarifying today that none of us are vets in here, and we are always saying, please speak with your vet before considering a vegan diet. It's not right for every cat. And I think, Laura, you would say perhaps, what would you say about dogs?
Well, we hope that, you know, because they are non-obligate carnivores, that eventually we could say that all dogs could thrive on it. But definitely find a veterinarian that is open to the conversation, and there are many. And so we were talking about this earlier when before we were in the studio here, is that if you do want information or want to find a veterinarian here in the Vancouver area, we do know who they are. So get in touch with us here.
Yes, you can get in touch with us through our website, animalvoices.org. And, you know, speaking of trying to find a vet who is supportive of an animal going vegan, I can't even find a vet who is vegan themselves, which I find strange that somebody who cares for animals has not really thought about that for themselves. I know a vegan vet tech, and I would like to use her to get into the vet clinic and maybe have a discussion with the staff there, because two of us may be better than one. But
That's the thing, is that pretty much if you are, you take an oath as a vet that you're not going to do harm, but then you eat animals.
I know. Right? That's very ironic. And I think we all belong to the Facebook group Vancouver Vegans. And quite often you'll see vegans post on there asking if they know a vegan fill in the blank, any kind of professional that they want to give their money to. In someone who supports animals and maybe even who does some advocacy. And this question comes up so frequently and nobody seems to have an answer. It's disappointing.
Right.
But we can work from there, right? We can do some advocacy. And Laura, you have something you want to say?
It still is the same question of carnism. We're all dealing with the cultural belief and the cultural evolution of carnism. And my experience is that veterinarians are definitely... many of them are choosing newer choices, just as all of us in society are choosing newer choices. And we've had conversations with many vegan vet techs here in Vancouver that are actually getting in touch with us, and their veterinarians are excited about it because they're excited about it. So things are changing very quickly.
They are. I'm noticing the vegan movement is changing so much that I'm no longer quite so depressed about it as I was a few months ago. And I'm not saying that jokingly. I really felt hopeless a few months ago. And now when I go into a restaurant and I ask for a vegan option, I no longer get given the gluten-free menu and have to educate them on what that means. Right. Things are changing so quickly. And I really thank people like you, Laura, who have put in so much time into creating change in the world. And
thank you
as well, Daniela, with all your research and you coming on the show and sharing things with us.
Anytime.
Yeah.
I just want to also, and I think we've discussed this before the show as well, is we're responsible for these animals. They rely on us. And, you know, just like the vegan baby in Italy that almost died, there was an article, or there is an article, that's always pulled up, and it's the cat, the vegan cat almost died. But if you read that article, come on, let's be serious. Soy milk and carrots and potatoes or something he was feeding or to the cat, that is not a vegan or a plant-based diet. That is completely not adequate even for humans. So that was wrong. And I just want to say that there's way more that goes into feeding anybody a whole plant-based diet. So much more research and knowledge than just calling, you know, out a propaganda article and say, you're killing your cats.
Exactly. And don't be overwhelmed by the fact that you need to do a little bit of research, because there are websites out there. I mean, Veggie Cat is one that I've looked at, for example.
And I would definitely recommend balanceit.com. And this is where you can go and actually create a vegan diet for your dog. This would be specific for dog. You could check with regards to cat. I do know some that have used Balanceit. Okay. But Balanceit has been created by a board-certified veterinary nutritionist. And they do provide the supplement that you would purchase. Then you could do a home-cooked meal. So I'd strongly recommend balanceit.com.
I think that would be so easy for dogs, especially because I feel like dogs will eat anything.
They do.
Cats are a little bit trickier. But I do try to pay attention to what my cat eats on my plate. If I leave my dinner plate on the table, she'll get at it. And I make a mental note of what she will eat so I can put that in a future stew for her.
Right. And also cats, if they don't eat, you can't force them. They will just not eat. And a cat that doesn't eat for over 48 hours is a severe medical condition. Actually, they can go into liver failure. So even if your cat doesn't eat any kind of food, just be alarmed that 48 hours a cat not eating is alarming.
Okay, good to know.
Get to the vet.
Yeah, get to the vet.
I want to go back to the issue of the typical pet food that we have out there now. I think I myself thought years ago that the pet food that's sold in the veterinary clinics only, like Royal Canin and what are the other brands?
Medi-Cal, Hill's Diet.
Right. Yeah. So I always thought those would be a little bit higher quality and perhaps not taken from these rendering facilities. But in speaking with both of you prior to this show today, you let me know that they are from those rendering plants as well.
It's possible, and these are the things that we always, you know, as activists, there probably will be a lot more information out there if you did want to find that information. Mm-hmm. I would just say in the meantime, it's not so much about being against something, it's about how can we educate and bring new choices so that we can then, you know, make new choices and be able to purchase or cook, you know, foods that are nutritionally balanced. So I would say that we'd want to do the research before we would say that that's exactly the case
with
those companies.
I understand. And there is one brand that, Daniela, you do support from the veterinary clinic simply because it has hydrolyzed soy protein, which you say you can't find in a pet store. Is that right?
You can't, and you have to order it through your vet. You can't even just pick it up. I think you have to order it because it is a... hypoallergenic, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's because, again, one of my cats, that's the best solution that is commercially available for me at this time. And with a multi-cat household, it can be very difficult. You need to understand some might have other issues, and they all feed at the same time. So yes, that's the one product I support because it's the best for my cats. And all three are on them. And my vet said, yeah, they can be long-term, all three of them on them, and that's great. And it is the main, or the only protein in there is hydrolyzed soy protein. Mm-hmm. And they're thriving, like they're super healthy.
You're a good cat mom. I remember talking to you a few days ago and you said if they needed a surgery that was $10,000, you would take out a loan. Not many people would say that. Good for you.
They're my babies.
Laura, do you have pets as well?
I did up until 2 years ago, and actually the inspiration behind dog, her name was Shanti, and I had her for 13 years, and she was a vegetarian, then vegan border collie. And yeah. So I'm just in the process of opening up for a new one. So,
good. And mm-hmm. Where do you think you're going to get it from? Do you know?
Don't know. This has to be a border collie. That's all I know.
I love them. They're really smart. I actually mm-hmm. have an interesting border collie story. My boyfriend, when I was 16 years old, had this one named Kelty. And I don't know if many of you know the geography of Vancouver Island, but they grew up in Oak Bay and their grandparents lived out in Sydney, which is out by the ferries. It's probably a 45-minute drive. And they left the dog with the grandparents while they went camping for the weekend or something. And the dog got away. And I don't remember all the details specifically, but I do remember that the dog ended up back at the family home. And it had cut up feet and it was covered in sand. So they figured perhaps it took the beach all the way home. I don't know. But wow. That just goes to show how smart border collies are. They're incredible. Wow, I love awesome. Them and very energetic.
Mm-hmm. I think most, like cats as well, there's stories where they've traveled like days to find their old home. And that's why when you rehome pets, you should always make sure that they're first indoors and then mm-hmm. otherwise they look for their old home.
There's so many stories of pets that have done things like that. And I was listening to some of Nathan Runkle's video or YouTube videos from previous animal rights conferences. And he was trying to instill some compassion in viewers who may not yet be vegan by telling empathetic stories about animals. And he mentioned a pair of dogs that were friends, and one of them died and got hit by a car on the road. And the dog friend of that dog was sitting with it and licking its face for hours and just wouldn't leave its side. And another story about a dog whose owner died and was buried, and the dog would lay by that gravesite for days, only going home to eat and then coming back.
Right.
Just love dogs. I wish I could have one. They're so loyal, such beautiful creatures.
Right. And cats are so misunderstood.
They are.
I have a cat, I should say. I know I'm sounding like more of a dog person right now, but I do have a cat, Ting Ting, and I always say she's like a dog too. She's so friendly and needy.
Well, actually, one of my cats will sit, give both paws and a kiss. Mm-hmm. I've trained him to do this. So I'll be like, come here. And I'll say, sit. And he'll sit. And I said, give me paw. Give me the other paw. Give me a kiss. And he gives me a kiss.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even make that effort with Ting Ting. I'm sure I could. You have to give us a video of that so we can put it up on the website.
I think a lot of women like to find men would do that.
Exactly.
Train that. Or a partner.
Well, we have to wrap it up now. You've been listening to Animal Voices Radio on Vancouver's CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, British Columbia, Canada. You can find us on Facebook at Animal Voices Radio and on the web at animalvoices.org. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. And thanks, everybody who was part of the show today.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.